Welcome to In Our Mom's Basement Video Game Podcast, where we talk about everything video games with your host, Dan Giofue and Rage Quit Pat.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to In Our Mom's Basement Podcast. This is episode 60. Yes, the big 6-0. I am your host, Rage Quit Pat. I'm joined by, of course, my co-host, Dan the Pizza Man, the lover of many pizzas. You can listen to this podcast on, if you go to innermomsbasement.com, it has all of the podcast platforms, iTunes, Google Play, and many, many more. And today is a very special episode here on In Our Mom's Basement. We are welcoming a guest today, Steve-O from the Gutter Nerds, who has been streaming for 7 years, podcasting for 9. He runs the Gutter Nerds Twitch and YouTube channels, where he riffs jokes and improvises songs during games. Also, I'm going to throw in there, he does great sound effects. In his day job, he provides closed captions for live television. Steve-O, welcome to the Man Cave. How are you?
Thanks, Rage Quit. I appreciate it. I'm so happy to be here. You said I was special, but you tell that to all the guests, don't you? Don't lie to me, boy.
We have introduced every single guest as a special guest, so I'm sorry.
But you know what? They are all very special. I've listened to like Jamie Lynn's and Locke's, and it's just fantastic. Like, fantastic personalities. That you consider me to be a special among them, I appreciate.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. And again, we appreciate you joining us. Chat, if you guys have any questions for Steve-O, feel free to ask them in the chat, and we will ask them. And let's kick it off. Dan, first question for our esteemed guest here.
So real quick, Gutter, what makes you a little bit more special is you help us with graphics.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I do put together the real shitty face photoshops for you guys in patented Steve-O fashion. Yes. I will tell you, I put in way more effort into y'all's than I do mine. Like, I take my face and I slide it over. And whenever Pat sends something to me, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to put in some effort on this one. Let's see if we can't blend this a little bit or something.
I do think they look beautiful, though.
Oh, thank you.
Made our Rage Quit look better in a few pictures.
Well, Dan didn't appreciate the Rainbow Six one at first because I sent them the one of him smile. He was like, oh, could you use a better picture? I'm like, no, I think that one looks good.
When I used to do that with our crew, I would try to actively find the worst picture of their face I could find, where they're like screaming or doing something or, you know, drooling on themselves or whatever. And they asked me to please stop doing that. So. I get you.
All right. So kicking off the podcast, we like to run down a few questions, get to know you a little bit more and about you and your streams. So to start, when did you start When did you start gaming? When did you start really getting into gaming? And, you know, how long have you been streaming? We know you've been streaming for quite a few years, but, you know, where did it start?
Sure. I started gaming when I was 6. So the NES, the Nintendo Entertainment System, had released right about when I was like 5 or 6. And I played it at a cousin's house, and my mom told my grandparents, she said, I swear to God, if you get him a Nintendo, we're never coming back. I don't want him playing video games because he'll never stop. And they did it anyway, and I never stopped. So for the last 30 years, 31 years, I've been a gamer. Every console, practically every console that's come out, with some exceptions, I've acquired in some form or fashion. And then we started streaming in 2013, I think it was, because we were doing... We started off with a webcomic. We had a webcomic called Angry Cuddles back then. And the webcomic also became a podcast. And then we decided we wanted to take the podcast live. So I'm one of the few people, I think, that did not start out as a viewer. I had never watched any Twitch streams before streaming myself. So I had no idea what I was doing or what one should look like or anything like that. And so we just took our podcast and did it live for 0 people for a while. And then they started filtering in.
How did tell us about the Gutter Nerds. You know, how did the Gutter Nerds all start? I know you do have quite a few people that are part of the Gutter Nerds. So how did that all come about?
So back to the Angry Cuddles thing, we had launched the Twitch channel and we were making web comics, doing podcasts, Twitch streaming, all under that name. There is a company called Rovio, and Rovio owns a franchise called Angry Birds. You've probably heard of Angry Birds. So we had filed for a trademark. We thought, you know what, let's go ahead and trademark our name because we want some protection going forward. We want to have merch, all that stuff. So Rovio filed opposition to our trademark. And so they said, would you, you know, we don't like the fact that you have angry in your name. We have angry in our name, even though we're two completely different things. So would you withdraw your trademark? I told them, like literally told them to fuck themselves. And so they said that they were going to go forward with the opposition. And so I hired a lawyer. And the lawyer talked to their lawyer, and they were like, yeah, you could fight this if you want, and you'd probably win, but it's going to cost you a lot of money to fight it. They're a very big company. So you could just change your name, because even if you withdrew your trademark at this point, you've pissed them off, so they may actually come after you at some point for your name. And it's, you know, it's a story of, you know, giant corporation pushing around the little guy. So we decided to rebrand. And we, it was me and the podcast members at the time. We rebranded to Gutter Nerds. At the time, you could not change your Twitch name, so we had to start over, like from zero followers on a new channel. And so we brought the people with us, and we've had a rotating cast of multiplayer and people that sit and chat with us ever since.
That's awesome. I want to go back to the previous question that Dan asked about, when you started gaming, what were some of your favorite games on the SNES? Because, you know, back then, you know, a lot of great games. What was kind of one that you really, enjoyed playing?
So like the first console that I had was the NES, and the ones that I played a ton of on that were just Super Mario Brothers 1, 2, and 3, Snake Rattle and Roll, which is a rare property, and it's a crazy weird, like, fever dream psychedelic platforming game. Like things like Batman, Godzilla, anything that caught my eye as like an 8-year-old, you know, things that like 8-year-olds in the 80s would like. And then on, I followed through with Super NES. That was the system that I did eventually get like a Sega Genesis and stuff, but Nintendo was sort of where I was at for a really long time. And on Super NES, I think it was like Mario Kart was probably 80% of what we would play. Super Ghouls and Ghosts. Again, Mario. I probably played Mario more than anything, which is not, it's a boring answer, but that's the truth.
I know you're a Star Wars fan. Did you ever play the Super Star Wars games?
Yeah, I did. And I am. And actually, you joined me, Rage Quit, on some Battlefront 2 during Star Wars sessions.
Yeah, I wish. You know,
it was fun.
I know. The game got better. I could imagine, though, if we actually played the really good one on PlayStation 2, that would have been
surprisingly, cool. Rage Quit bitched a lot about that game.
Battlefront 2?
Yeah.
The story goes, I sent Dan, me and him game share on Xbox.
Yeah.
So I sent him the reviews of the game. I'm like, dude, I don't think we should get this game. Dan's like, don't listen to reviews, man. Judge it for yourself. So I decided to listen to him, even though at one point he bought Homefront Revolution. I should have thought about that. So I was like, okay.
Dan!
So I ended up buying the $80 Battlefront Edition that came with...
Oh, so you went all out.
I went all out. And me and him start playing. And obviously, you know, the whole Battlefront 2 scenario. Everybody was pay to win. And me and him are getting destroyed by all these people. And I'm like, dude, this is, I can't believe I spent $80 on this freaking game.
I paid, but I'm not winning. What the hell? Yeah,
but no, then you played it many, many years later. So, you know, you're getting your money was worth now.
That's
one of the things, and we all, you know, we complain about games being released incomplete. I know I'm on a tangent now, but the thing that I like is that any game can be redeemed. You know, No Man's Sky was an absolute joke when it launched. And now it's a legit game.
Oh, dude, I have so much fun in that game now. It's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. And the games now, not just tweaks, games now are different from what they were when they launched in some cases, and it's amazing. But yeah, to answer your question, Super Star Wars, yeah, I did play that game. I beat it though for the first time in January of this year.
Oh my goodness!
Because that game is hard, dude.
I know. I remember when I was a kid. I mean, the rage quit was a little bit heavier when I was a kid. So, you know, let's just say things happened. Nothing broke, but
I think as a kid, I think we were all pretty much ragers when we were kids. I know I got pissed off at a few games.
I've never broken a controller. I've never broken a controller.
Really?
Yeah. I've.
Oh wow.
I've wanted to.
A headset?
No headsets.
On TV?
I think I've broken. I've never broken a TV. On purpose. I've broken a TV on accident.
Were you playing the Wii?
I was working at GameStop when the Wii came out, and I remember we used to joke because people would come in and go like, yeah, my Wii remote slipped out of my hand and hit my flat screen LCD, and at the time that screen was not like covered, it's pretty flimsy, it's just like a big computer monitor. And they said, yeah, I broke my TV. And we'd be like, but that Wii remote's still intact, right? And I'm like, oh, yeah, nothing will break this Wii remote. But the TV broke.
You're our second guest that is a GameStop alumni. Dan and I are also GameStop alumni as well.
Oh, you guys worked for the crooked G2.
I worked there for 4 years of my life. And
where did you ascend to? Was it all like, did you grow in the company? Did you just... spend your time as a customer service associate or a game advisor?
Yeah, I became a senior game advisor. So I was a part-time. So I got my keys, and the keys were just to unlock the door. But yeah, you know, I at that time, you know, when back then, I mean, it was just all about the games. Now, obviously, GameStop's a freaking wreck. But, you know, it was all about the games. So I learned there. You know, I learned about all the ins and outs of... you know, GameStop and everything, but you know, I don't regret it. I met Dan through GameStop. A lot of the friends I have that I'm really good friends with, I met through GameStop. So,
actually, same. Like, and there's something about going through that trauma together, I think, that brings people together. Because at the time, the company was hugely profitable at the time, and now they're closing stores left and right, but. And because they were so profitable and so popular, they didn't really care about turnover because, like, everybody wants to work for a video game company and they'll do it for $0 an hour. So they could just turn you over. And we felt that where we were, but we made a ton of friends. And, you know, like you said, did you guys have game checkouts when you were working there?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. We abused that.
Yeah. Chances are if I gave someone the copy off the wall, I played it.
Right.
I know Pat misses organizing that wall.
Yeah, that was the worst.
There's something real zen about alphabetizing a GameStop game wall.
I fucking hated it. I don't know.
Try doing it. Yeah, the PS2 wall was the greatest one.
The 50 Cent Blood in the Sand, did that go in 5 or did that go in F?
Oh my god, gonna fucking take it, but I'm out of there, thank god.
Hey, you survived it, that's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Moving on to the next question here, so you have a morning drive time show, you know, what is that about, what's going on with that, you know, how's that been going?
It was a test, and it's still technically a test, we're still technically in beta, but the show came about because we did a podcast every Monday night live, and we had 4 people in the studio. Nerdez is my wife. She would produce the show from the, like she would run the scenes and run cams and everything like that. We had like a 3 camera setup, all this crazy crap. When COVID hit, we were like, oh, I guess we're not having people over to the house ever again. So we put the podcast on hiatus, which is still technically on hiatus. But I still wanted to do some sort of talkie show kind of thing. And my buddy Mark was, who I've known for 30 years, who's been supporting the stream since we started and helped build the studio and everything. He said, hey, you know, we always thought about doing a radio show when we were a kid. Would you ever want to do something like that? And I was like, I mean, we can do something like that right now. I have a Twitch channel. We can do a radio. We could do like a radio show in the morning that, you know, is just basically it's just chatting. And so it started with that. And then he, because his mornings are sort of vary, I ended up periodically reaching out to people. And so it's become, sometimes I do interviews now. And we had Loch Ness on this morning. I've interviewed Rain, who's a Twitch streamer and works has worked in 2D, 3D conversion for Hollywood. We've had other podcasters on to talk about what they do. And it ends up being like a really cool way for me to do something new and unique during the week. So I really like it. And, but it's still technically a test. I'm not exactly sure what it's going to become. Right now, it's more like a, hey, people are getting up and going to work, and there's not a lot of streamers that are, I mean, there's always streamers on Twitch, but like, especially North America, at 8 a.m. on a Thursday morning, there's not a whole lot of people on and gaming, so we have let people tune in and just listen while we chat.
Do you plan on bringing the podcast back, or, you know, what's going on with that? Because I know you said it's on a hiatus, and I do remember joining it one time when you were doing that, the Star Wars Shark Tank.
Oh, yeah. That was one of our first interactions with you, I think.
Yeah, it was.
Was we had people pitching their Star Wars game ideas. I don't know that it'll come back or if it'll come back in a different form or fashion, because I really loved doing it. And the people that I worked with are incredibly talented people. And Nerdez is an amazing producer. But at the same time, for me, I realized that when we stopped doing it, I realized how much less stress it was, because it was so much fun and I loved doing it, but it was an incredible and an insane amount of work and production that we would put into it. And it was doing fine, but it wasn't growing. And so it just sort of became this big stress ball. So we'll see, maybe we'll take the year off and reevaluate. But as of right now, like being able to game and do, if we do talk shows, having them not produced and just being just like basically a just chatting stream really is giving me life and not stressing me out.
So you're on the Inner Mom's Basement Shark Tank now. So pitch Dan and I your Star Wars game.
Oh, okay. Yes. I would love to hear this.
Okay, hello, sharks. I am looking for $10,000 for 10% equity stake in my Star Wars game. This Star Wars game follows in the vein of Knights of the Old Republic, but is more action than RPG. It is a co-op game, and it is a story-driven co-op game where you are a survivor from the Fallen Jedi Temple between episodes 3 and episodes 4. You are one of the younglings that survived, and you are searching for a master to complete your training. And the co-op works by you both making decisions in the world as you're playing and talking to people. And the more decisions you make that are opposite to each other, the more separated you become. Ideally, there are two endings to the game. One where you work together to defeat the big bad if you have made a lot of decisions in cooperation. And the other one being where the final boss of the game is each other if you have split too far apart.
I like it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make you an offer. I like that idea. I think the action part's pretty cool, but I like to add a little bit of RPG elements. I want to add some choices and some leveling up things as well. I think that would make the game a little bit better as well. I'm going to give you actually $50,000, but I'd like 20% because, you know, I know what I can do in this business. I play a lot of Western RPGs. And Star Wars KOTOR is actually one of my favorite games. So I think we would do well. I think we'd do a great job.
I think that's an insanely enticing offer, and that equity is astounding. So, Dan, do you have a counter?
Can I have a Baby Yoda?
Baby Yoda has to be in it. Like, there's no question.
We have multiple
Baby Yodas in our house right now.
I'll keep the game the same, but I will match $50,000.
So
how much percent?
That's we'll do 25.
Ooh. Okay. Ooh. I think I'm going to go with Rage because I think that he mentioned, you know, the RPG elements and BioWare, and I think that style of action RPG combo will will go well. So I'm going with Rage.
All right, let's make it happen.
You know what? We're doing this again. We're doing this again, and I'm coming more prepared.
Camera handshake.
Camera handshake. Yeah.
another question we had, Steve-O. You know, you're the you're the first mixer streamer that's been on our show since it's been given to Facebook. And I say given because it was given.
Oh yeah, it was handed over on a silver platter.
You know, tell us about your time there. And you know, how was the transition since being back to Twitch? Because I know you were on Twitch before. Mm-hmm. You went to Mixer. So how was your time on Mixer? And then how was the transition back?
Yeah, so we were on Mixer for 9 months total. When it's funny because I remember we went to PAX South once as a group, and my wife Nerdez said we saw the Mixer booth, and Twitch didn't have a booth at PAX South, but Mixer did. And she goes, "What's Mixer?" Like, oh, it's another streaming platform, kind of like Twitch. She goes, "Do you want to check it out?" And at the time, I went, "No, why would I? Why would I have anything to do with Mixer?" And just like, I was just like a total ass. And so, like, fast forward a few months later, Locke had moved to Mixer, and Nerdist came back, and she goes, "Hey, you know, I know you've been. I had been sort of struggling with what I wanted to do with the stream, and our growth had sort of risen throughout 2017, 2018, and then 19 just sort of plateaued." And I didn't, like, the whole year didn't, like, move at all. I was feeling really down. She said, "You should, you know, take a cue from Locke and go check out Mixer. See if you want to, you know, what you can learn over there, if you can build something over there and create your own space." And so that's what we started doing. And I really loved it and met all of you guys through the Mixer way. So I, in no way, shape, or form do I regret it at all. I learned a ton. And then, like, the week before they shut down, and we took our stream offline because of the social issues that they were dealing with that we wanted to be supportive of. Yeah. And then they just went, "Fuck it, we're not coming back." And so to me, it was just like, "Oh, okay, I guess we'll just go back home then." So it was terribly undramatic for me, because I was just like, "Oh, okay, well, let's just take what we learned with Mixer, and now we're all going to basically be on the same platform anyway, so I'd have to split my time between Mixer and Twitch anymore." And it ended up working out really well. I know for a lot of other people it was terribly traumatic, and you know, a lot of them are still going through a lot of questions having to switch over. For us, it's been just like, "Okay, we'll just pick up where we left off."
You didn't consider Facebook gaming at all?
Not for one single second. And now watch me fast forward like 2 years down the road, and I'm like, "Man, Facebook's great," or something. You know, I don't know.
Is there any features from Mixer that you wish would, you know, come to Twitch?
So, I was thinking about that. Some of the things that I thought I was gonna miss, I have ended up not really missing much. So, like FTL, I don't miss so much because we probably, for the most part, have a 3 to 4 second delay on Twitch. So, and especially if I'm gaming and I'm getting to chat a few moments late anyway, it ended up not really mattering. Mixed play, I thought I was going to miss. And to a certain extent, I do, because there was a lot of interactivity you could do with mixed play. During Star Wars Month, we had like the AT-ATs, like you could summon X-Wings and shit like on screen. I can't do that on Twitch, so kind of miss that. The analytics are better on Twitch. Co-streaming I miss, because that was a lot of fun, being able to do, you know, side-by-side streams with people. I think probably co-streaming is the main thing. Sparks a little bit, but I think probably just that's the number one thing I think is that co-op streaming thing.
Yeah, that's probably one of my favorite features as well from Mixer.
Is there something that stood out to you guys, like when you came back?
I think as Pat and I, we both run this channel together, and what we used to do is we used to do co-streams. You know, he would log into his Mixer, I would log into the main one, and we would co-stream. You know, it would be an easier way to do videos for recording and just bring more mm-hmm. people to the screen. It was a good thing. You know, we liked that, and then obviously, I mean, we met a lot of great people on Mixer. The community was awesome. I miss the community the most, because, you know, Twitch is a little toxic. It's a little toxic.
It's sort of like controlling a wildfire. Yeah, with Mixer, because the mod team and the community leaders in Mixer were so on the ball about it. I never worried about it. With Twitch, I've gotten so fast. I mentioned this earlier today, actually. I've gotten so fast at banning people. Like, if someone new comes in and I just, like, I see where this is going, even if they've not done anything wrong yet, you get a sixth sense of, like, they're building to something stupid, and don't even want to mess with it.
Yeah, to kind of piggyback off what Dan said, it was cool, and it was a lot easier for, like, Dan and I, if we wanted to play, like, a co-op game, you know, we could just co-stream, rather than, like, now, sometimes there's games that Dan and I play, we'll have to kind of do it through Discord, and he'll just put me, like, on cam. So that was really cool. And then, yeah, as he said, like, meeting everyone on there, like you guys, we met, you know, a lot of great people on Mixer. I personally didn't enjoy streaming on the platform.
You mentioned a couple times that you missed Twitch, and you actually went back, like, right before, right?
Yeah, you know, I tried to have hope for Mixer. You know, I can't speak for Dan how he felt about it, but I mean, I'll let him, you know, say you know how he feels. But, you know, like I said, I tried to have hope, because when I saw your streams and I saw that you were doing retro and you were doing, like, variety streaming, and, like, other partners I saw doing variety streaming, I tried to have some hope, like, oh wow, you know, there's a partner actually doing variety streaming. Because the majority of the time when I saw, like, partner, and I'm not knocking any of them, but I just don't enjoy watching Fortnite. I don't really enjoy watching battle royales or anything like that. I'm, you know, a variety streamer myself, so I like to see a little bit of variety rather than the same old BR and stuff like that. So I tried to have hope with that, but I just felt like the content we were creating, I just felt it was a better fit on Twitch, like with podcasting and with variety streaming. I just felt that Mixer was missing out on a lot of great content creators who were variety streamers. And then, you know, like I said, like you and, like, other variety streamers that I've met, I felt like Mixer was kind of dropping the ball with them.
Yeah, and that makes sense. That makes perfect sense to me.
And, like, I don't know how, you know, before we jump to Dan, we're just going to take a quick break for our sponsor. All right, we're back. All right, Dan, did you want to kind of say, like, how you felt, you know, when I, you know, messaged you and I said, hey, maybe we should go back to Twitch?
You know, I had really big hopes for Mixer, man. You know, I thought they could have done something great with the platform if they went the right way. They were bringing in great features that I really liked. I really liked the interactive, that you can actually play games with streamers just from that little, you know, little soundboard area. Yep. I thought that was great. I thought they were going in the right direction. They just couldn't really deliver it at the end, you know. Even though you bring in Ninja, you know, Ninja's one of the biggest streamers, but Not even he could save it.
Yeah, and I don't know how much, you know, I'm not a business major and I'm not an econ major or anything like that. So just, you know, take my thought here with a grain of salt. I'm not a professional, but I do wonder about it looked like they were investing in their platform at first. And when we came over to Mixer was about the time that, right about the end of it, where they had stopped investing in their platform. And they were bringing over names, you know, like you said, like Ninja, and it was Shroud. Was Shroud one of them?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was like, oh, okay. So now they've invested in their platform and they're bringing over big names. So we'll come. This is a good time to come over and try. And we did. And it started out great. But a part of me wonders now if after that initial, like, investment, if they just brought over the big names for the express purpose of, like, 6 months from now, we're just going to sell it. And so we want to, you know, inflate, I guess, the value of our platform by having these big names on it. And that was the easiest and quickest way to do it, as opposed to actually trying to build something and retain an audience.
Yeah, no, yeah. I agree with that completely. And I don't know. It's weird, but, you know, even though it came to an end like that, I mean, it pretty much did come out of nowhere, though. But and a lot of people lost their partnerships. I mean, sure, yeah, you know, Facebook offered their partnerships and everything. You know, Twitch was allowing people back in. So, I mean, at least that was good. But I don't think anyone actually did buy a Mixer, did they?
I mean, I joke and say that Mixer pretty much gave themselves to Facebook. Like, Phil Spencer pretty much called up Mark Zuckerberg, like, hey, take this shit.
I thought that they had gotten some, I guess I just assumed that they had gotten some sort of financial compensation, like that Facebook had given them something for it.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, as Dan said, you know, and if we said, we met a lot of great people on there that were now, you know, it is what it is. I thought when Dan and I first started streaming there, I felt that we could have made some noise, but you know, I just think that the platform also has the support on their end. I know most streamers, if you ask them for advice, it's like, oh, you got to do this, you got to do that. But the platform helps too. You know, if they're, you know, like I said, the partner spotlight. When I saw someone not streaming a Battle Royale, I went to their streams. That's how I met Locke. That's how I met, and obviously I met you through Locke and Jamie and stuff like that and other streamers. So, you know, it was like a breath of fresh air. So what have you been streaming now? So tell us about, you know, some of your streams on Fridays. You do the Gaming Riffs.
Yeah.
You also post on YouTube as well, which are pretty hysterical. Retro, your Saturday morning retro. How do you choose your retro games and, you know?
I play whatever you say you're about to play. If you, you mentioned that, Parasite Eve and Fear Effect, and I was like, shit, that's a good idea. I'll just take Rage Quit's idea. That's the way to do it. The best way to describe the stream, I guess, is that we're a variety stream. There, I'm trying to create a through line. I'm trying to create that, so that idea of a game riff, right? And anybody that's familiar with a TV show called Mystery Science Theater 3000 will be familiar with the style of where they would watch a bad movie, do a more scripted, refined, like, I'll write out the jokes and be thoughtful and do that kind of thing for it. So it's a much more produced-y kind of thing. And then the game riffs that we do live on Fridays. So everything we do on during the midday, during the week right now, which is Fridays, is story-driven games. Right now it's Ghost of Tsushima. And so we play through the story of the game and we sort of joke around and sing. And you mentioned the sound effects. We have different buttons where, like, I'll verbally make the sound effects for... I will literally mute the game and just go like shing ting 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 or just, you know, whatever dumb bullshit comes to my head. And it's Saturday Pacific is like Saturday morning retro. I wanted to evoke that like Saturday morning cartoon kind of, or Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie. And then I did some of the stuff on like Super NES and NES with the NES Classic and things like that. And then, to be fair though, it was, I think, Rage, I think you did mention that you had bought Parasite Eve or were considering streaming Parasite Eve. And then a couple people in chat were like, oh yeah, that's a great game. And I'd never played it. So that's where that came from.
Oh, I was looking to buy it, but it's going for like $60 right now. So I have like a budget when it comes to like retro games. My budget's like, if I'm spending $60, I'm at least getting like maybe two or three games, not, you know, 60, you know, it's crazy.
Like one 12 hour experience.
Yeah. And it's a good game. I really liked Parasite Eve. I remember playing it as a kid, and it was actually cool to watch you play it because I completely forgot how the game. I know it was kind of like a turn-based combat, but I completely forgot like how it worked. But it was definitely an underrated game by Square, and I really wish they would kind of go back to survival horror because it actually was a really good game.
This is my first time. I tried playing it when it came out for like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and I was too young and dumb to get what I was supposed to be doing. And now, though, as an adult, I'm playing it and going like, oh, this is a pretty unique experience. And I spent 3.5 hours on the final boss last Saturday and still couldn't finish it in two, Parasite Eve 2. It's rough. It's a hard game.
Yeah, it was a very difficult game for when I remember. I never finished it. I mean, a lot of the games, again, back then when us three were kids, were just not for the faint of heart. Now everyone has checkpoints, autosave. So, you know, we lucked out as adults.
Well, even with some of the older games that I'll play, like, let's see, when I played October before last, I played Super Ghosts and Goblins on Super NES.
Oh,
and
God.
I did the double playthrough to get like the true ending. But mm-hmm. The only reason I was able to do that is because of save state. And so I just cheesed the shit out of the game so that I could finish it. But with retro games, most of it, a lot of it comes from suggestion. So someone will go, hey, have you ever played, you know, Spyro? Oh, that's one thing that we do sometimes. If there's a remake of a game, I will do what's called a comparison retro stream. And so we'll do like a level in the original game and then do the exact same level in the remake so that you can see the differences. So we started it with Conker. We did the N64 version. And I would, you know, play for an hour, hour and a half, and then go back and do the exact same hour and a half on the Xbox remake, just so like, oh, little things they can change.
Yeah, no, I sorry, something for a second, my thing just kind of messed up. Sorry about that. Without spoiling anything, how is the ending for Shenmue 3? Because I haven't finished it yet.
Without spoiling anything specific, I had a ton of fun in Shenmue 3, and it was exactly the game that I wanted it to be, except that I thought after 20 years and a, you know, multi-million dollar Kickstarter, perhaps you should finish your story. And Yu Suzuki does not agree with me. And he was like, no, I told you Shenmue's going to be 17 fucking games. So you're going to play 17 fucking Shenmues. Oh, and I'll, of course, Suzuki-sensei, I'm so sorry.
Hopefully the fourth one doesn't take 13 years to come out. Hopefully it's just a couple of years.
My greatest fear is that I'm going to die before seeing the end of Ryo's journey. Like that's what I want from life. I married the love of my life in January or in December. And so now the only thing I have left to live for is the ending of the Shenmue series. So like, yeah,
finally gets revenge on Landy. You and me both. I mean, I was like, I remember when Shenmue 2 came out for the original Xbox, I was so amped. I'm like, oh my God.
Yep.
And then I was like, when's Shenmue 3? And 13 years later, it's finally here. And again, I saw the ending actually. It got spoiled for me on YouTube. God, hopefully the fourth game is like funded and it's good to go.
I think at this point though, now, so after all that time, when Shenmue 3 comes back, you want it to still have like the bones of Shenmue, like the DNA there, and then maybe do some new things. And it definitely had the bones of Shenmue there. Like the voice acting was, you know, exactly as cheesy as you remembered it being. But now I think at this point, I don't know, bring in another company like Bluehole or somebody that does really good ports and have them work on like updating and upgrading your game. Because now I think if you release Shenmue 4 with that same style, I think it's going to get real stale because it's a very slow paced game.
Talking.
What would you say is one of your favorite game series?
Metal Gear Solid and Resident Evil are the two like tent poles, I think, of like where I, as a gamer, that like formed the kind of games that I love. Stealth and survival horror are like my jam. So Metal Gear Solid and especially like the Twin Snakes remake that they did for GameCube with Silicon Knights is super good. I love it. I want to do like this, a full Metal Gear like plot line playthrough on stream one day. Same with Resident Evil. It's just so wacky and goofy. And Resident Evil 7 was probably the scariest game I've ever played in my life. I think Resident Evil 7 is the scariest game, like for me, period, bar none. And I've played Outlast. I've played, you know, Last of Us, and so those two really stick up there. They're real cinematic, and I was a film student, so anything that like really leans heavily into like that cinematic flair, I'm gonna love.
Yeah, and the new one comes out now this year. I mean, not this year. I'm sorry, next year. Resident Evil Village, which looks really exciting. I can't wait for that one.
Very much looking forward to it. I love that they went first person with 7. And don't get me wrong, the remakes of 2 and 3 were fantastic. Like, they were very well done. Even 3, I think 3 was very well done. But 7 was, that first person is so immersive and gritty. And the only thing different about 7 from like a classic, like Resident Evil 1, like the original Resident Evil game, was the camera. It still had that same, you know, exploration, solving puzzles, gathering keys, doing stuff in the house. It was a very Resident Evil game, just with a new camera and a new skin, and it was so good. So I'm extremely looking forward to Village.
Yeah, I was a little skeptical on at first when they did the first person. I was like, oh no, it's going to be another like Outlast, because I do I do enjoy those games, but to me they're okay. Like Outlast, Amnesia, like they're not bad, but I get tired of the running back and forth and having to hide. Like I want to, you know, fight back, but you know,
right, yeah.
Resident Evil 7 blew me away about, you know, how good it was and everything like that. And I, you know, Resident Evil 2 remake is my top five favorite games of all.
It builds too, because like you said, in Outlast, the game is scary and the game is stressful, but it's not, it ended up not being fun. It was an experience that I'm glad that I had, but I would never go play it again. But I would totally go back and play Resident Evil 7 again. Because you start off with nothing, and yeah. So you do have to do the hidey runny, you know, slink around kind of bit. But then you get your pistol, and then you get your shotgun, and then it builds up to the point where you're like, okay, now I can shoot some fuckers, you know?
Yeah, and especially that scene when your wife freaking, spoiler alert, if no one's played it, chainsaws your freaking hand off.
Oh, jeez. Oh, yeah, the beginning of the game. Oh, God, Nerdez. I played it with Nerdez, and I love playing horror games with my wife. And to the point, she played through Resident Evil 3 straight up, yes, by herself. Like,
I remember that, yes.
Yeah, and she's so funny. It is the greatest reactions, like straight up screams. We had a doggo cam where when we'd get too scared, we'd just put the camera on the doggos for a little bit and like calm down. And it, yeah, just a ton. I did a super cut of all the times we jumped in Resident Evil 7. And there's like, it's on our YouTube channel. There's like 35 different moments where we came out of our chair. It's just,
yeah, we both had I know Dan had a couple jump scares. It's on, we have a VOD of him getting creeped out and
oh damn, I deleted it.
No, that VOD's there.
What? Leave it, Dan.
Yeah, that game scares shit out of me though.
It's good.
So this is a question we like to ask all our podcast guests and your friends with Loch Ness, so we need an answer from you as well. Does pineapple go on pizza?
Yeah, it absolutely does. There is one of my go-tos.
And
is what is it, Rage? What is it, buddy?
Come on, man.
Look.
Come on, man. There's no
way.
Have you ever
had a Domino's Hawaiian pizza with the Canadian bacon and the pineapple? Have you ever prefaced it though with like two margaritas?
No. I've never had a thought in my mind to ever put pineapple on my pizza.
Oh, it's so good, buddy.
No.
It's like it feels like I'm on the beach. Like, I'm on vacation when I get a Hawaiian pizza.
Man, Steve, I thought you were going to say no, man. I thought you loved barbecue. Kind of like, you know, you're from down south. I thought it was like barbecue food, you know, and like good pizza.
Look, man, Pat, these are the questions you're supposed to be asking before we invite them as guests, okay?
I know, but
What did Locke say?
She loves it. She said yes as well. Yeah. Well, you guys, you guys are friends, and unfortunately, you guys haven't made the best decisions. So.
I don't know. So there's been some questionable decisions. That's true.
Yeah, but no, I've known besides you, I've known friends that have ordered, yeah, the Hawaiian pizza, but nope, not a thought. And then, the pizza man, what else are your thoughts here? You're the pizza man, so.
Yeah, Danny, you're the expert.
I kind of just want to leave this Discord right now and walk away.
Because of me?
But because I'm streaming, I'm trying to stay civil right now.
Oh. I can't yell at the guest in his face, so I guess I'll just be quiet.
Maybe if we meet at like a con or something, you know, we'll have a little bit of a better discussion. Like, hey, man, maybe you need to just take the pineapple off a little bit.
Look, I will tell you that
pepperoni.
It's my favorite. It's just straight up pepperoni pizza. Like that's where the magic happens. But
I'll tell you what,
really,
Steve-O,
yeah,
we'll bring you a pizza from New Jersey because nothing beats it with pepperoni, as long as you bring up some fried chicken.
Yeah, I can do that. The other thing we could do is we could take your Jersey Roni, and we can take there's a pizza establishment in North Texas run by a bunch of stoners called Mellow Mushroom, and they have a barbecue chicken pizza that's, to me, is very Texas. It's like chicken barbecue, the cheese, onions, I think peppers, stuff like that. So we could put, like, we could do that. You don't have to go anywhere near the pineapple, and we could have a, you know, a cross-country pizza-a-thon.
I don't know. I've never had pizza outside of New Jersey, New York.
I have, and it sucks.
It's like when I go down, yeah, I just want some fried chicken. I mean, bring me some fried chicken and some mac and cheese. Mac and cheese.
Yeah, we'll take you to there's a place called Babe's, and it's a chicken place, and it's family style. So they bring you like this mountain of fried chicken, and then they just keep bringing you shit like corn and mashed potatoes and biscuits, and the sides just keep coming. They're there as long as you're there. So it'll make you fat.
Well, I'm all for it. I'm down for it.
It's a good way to die.
That'll maybe be my last meal. Fried chicken, mac and cheese, cream corn. And
that sounds wonderful, though.
Yeah, doesn't it?
So we're coming in at the at the end of our podcast. And, you know, we always like to ask our guests, you know, this question here. Steve-O, what would be the best advice you would give to a new streamer, or like, you know, a smaller streamer? What would be the best advice you would give them?
I'm going to sound like a million other streamers that you've heard before, but there is one thing that I think is the absolute most biggest necessity that you have to do when you're starting out. Two things. One, choose a schedule and stick to it. If you need to take a break or take a day, that's fine. I'm not saying never take breaks, but whatever your schedule allows you to do, make that as consistent as possible. Because if I know that someone is on, you know, at this time of day, and I get used to that, it's very hard for me to keep track of someone's social media for when they're live. So even if you have one day that's like Friday from, you know, 9 to midnight will always be Friday 9 to midnight, and then we have bonus streams scattered throughout the week whenever we can do it. That's okay. But find something to make your, like, flagship show. And then the other thing for starting out, guilt trip your friends and family into watching you, because the hardest part for us was getting to 3 viewers. After 3, it sort of snowballed on its own up into about 10. And then, you know, there are sort of different benchmarks, but getting over that initial 0 to 3 is very difficult. So, you know, be like, just text your brother, your sister, your parents, you know, your roommate, your college pals, someone, one of your friends from work, and be like, hey, you know, you don't have to chat, but could you pull me up? Because if having that 3 or 4 people already there, I think gives you a really good, a much better chance at visibility. And also it's a psychological thing. Like, I'm not streaming to 0 people for 3 hours can beat your soul down. So, and I've done it. So, you know, just get some people to go to pull you up.
No, it's definitely some good advice. You know, every answer has been, you know, somewhat different when we asked this question. So, you know, so the wording is definitely very different. It's all not the same, but, you know, great advice there. And we always appreciate, you know, we take the advice ourselves as well. So, you know, we appreciate that.
Oh, no problem. What do you normally say? Like, what do you think yours would be if to someone, if you were at a convention and, you know, there's a 19-year-old who's like, I want to start streaming for the first time. What's the first thing I need to do? Or what's the first biggest thing to keep in mind?
So for me, turn off your viewers. When Dan and I first started streaming, I used to leave my viewers on. And as you said before, I'm streaming for 3 hours and I only see 4 viewers, I'm like pretty discouraged about it. And, you know, I'm talking, I'm doing everything I can to interact. But
I actually still do that. I want to be able to keep the energy. So I just assume that people are there, because if I see 0 or 1, you know, I don't want that to bring down my energy. I still want to be hyped. And you have, on average, this is a stat that I'm pulling from memory. So again, this is a, just take this with a grain of salt. If someone comes by your stream, you have 15 seconds before they decide if they're staying or not. Yeah. So you don't want to be sitting there reading or sitting there being quiet. You want to keep, even if you're talking about your day, even if you're talking about, I got up this morning and brushed my teeth, just be yourself and conversate constantly.
Yeah, that would be like one of my top advices. Dan, what would be one of yours? This is actually the first time we actually got asked that, but that's that would be
yeah.
My...
Well, yes, it's the first time. well, I keep my viewers on. I always keep my view. I always look at my view numbers. I mean, the numbers don't bother me that much. But the one thing I do is I always talk, even if it's to nobody. You know, if you've ever been to my streams, you'll always see me talking, and to myself. To the game, what I'm doing in the game, what am I gonna do in the game? You know, I always try to keep that alive.
There is a YouTube video that changed my life. It's and I can't remember. There's a gal that does the video. I can't remember her name. But if you go to YouTube and you type in how to stream to zero viewers, I believe it'll come up, and it talks about how to keep that conversation flowing if you have a hard time. Keeping the conversation going, that is, I 100% agree with you, Dan, that's absolutely imperative. Whether it's zero or 1,000, keeping your personality front and center is important.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. And we want to thank Steve-O for joining us on this monumental episode, podcast episode 60. Steve-O,
yeah, you're boomers now.
Steve-O, before we go, did you want to shout out your socials and your Twitch channel?
Sure. If you guys want to follow me, my name is Steve-O, but you can find me everywhere under the name Gutter Nerds. And so if you go to twitch.tv/gutternerds, youtube.com/gutternerds, look up Gutter Nerds on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We're there. I'm active on all the platforms. We're always posting stuff. And I would love to see you guys in chat on the show.
Alrighty, and you guys can listen to this episode. Again, if you go to innermomsbasement.com, there'll be a link for our podcast, and you could listen to it on all the podcast platform. So if iTunes, Spotify, Google, all that fun stuff. Again, Steve-O, thank you so much for taking the time out to join us. We really appreciate it. It was a great chat. Loved it.
I loved it too. Thanks for having me, guys. It means the world to me.
And real quick, to add to the where you can find us, I just got word we're officially on Amazon Music now. So you can find us on there.
Fancy. There doubling down on the Jeff Bezos pocket.
Got to do it. But again, guys, everybody take care. Thank you guys for joining us. And everyone take care and have a great evening.
Night.
You've just listened to the In Our Mom's Basement, a video game podcast with your hosts Dan Giofue and Rage Quit Pat. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Google Play. See you in the next episode.